Every day in Australia, a familiar scene plays out. A 20-year-old with diagnosed ADHD and an intellectual disability faces sentencing for assault. The magistrate, weighing the young man's violent upbringing and rehabilitation prospects, orders supervised community service rather than imprisonment. By morning, the headline screams, "Attacker walks free." Politicians call for tougher sentences. The cycle continues. This pattern, sensationalist media stoking public outrage which then drives policy, has created a justice system in crisis. Despite falling crime rates, Australia's prison population surged 9% in just 1 year, 2013-2014. Victoria alone saw a 25% increase between 2013-2016, after parole law changes. Politicians have learned that appearing tough on crime wins votes, regardless of whether these policies actually work. Meanwhile, billions flow into new prisons while rehabilitation programs starve for funding. What if our entire approach to criminal justice is fundamentally flawed? Step into a magistrate's court and the power imbalance is immediate. High ceilings, imposing counters, and stern officials create an atmosphere of intimidation. If you're middle class and educated, you'll likely be the only one besides legal professionals in formal attire. Everyone else wears track pants and hoodies, creating visual distinctions between respectable citizens and criminals before any case begins. Take Nigel, 18, raised by an alcoholic mother after his father abandoned them. His fingerprint on a DVD case in a burglarized home wouldn't typically secure a conviction if properly defended. Without money for a private lawyer, he relies on an overworked duty lawyer juggling 20 cases. Legal aid cuts exclude him since he's unlikely to face prison as a first-time offender, a catch-22, leaving him vulnerable. The pressure to plead guilty is relentless. Each court appearance means lost work, childcare costs, and transportation expenses. Many plead guilty to get it over with, trapping themselves in cycles of punishment rather than rehabilitation. The system measures success through bureaucratic metrics rather than meaningful life changes, perpetuating cycles of reoffending. Real offenders aren't comic book villains. Young, homeless Angus and abused Nigel are complex individuals shaped by circumstances, not inherent evil. Portraying criminals as irredeemable others lets society avoid deeper responsibility. Crime emerges from interconnected disadvantages. Poverty creates material hardship and chronic instability in housing and basic needs. Social exclusion blocks access to support networks and opportunities. Some laws directly criminalize poverty through restrictions on begging or sleeping rough. While Social Security exists, complex bureaucratic requirements often prevent access for those most in need. Children in disadvantaged households lack stability, nutrition, education, and role models. Basic tasks like banking or renting become nearly impossible. Multiple disadvantages compound to exclude people from participating in Australian society. Indigenous overrepresentation in crime illustrates this dynamic, stemming not from cultural factors, but from environmental conditions, intergenerational trauma, and colonial legacies. Trauma trails from forced removals have damaged family structures and communities across generations, while ongoing discrimination perpetuates these disadvantages. Common justifications for punishment, retribution, accountability, deterrence, lack empirical support. Our justice system prioritizes legal precedent over behavioral evidence. While prisons aim to enhance public safety and reduce reoffending, they mainly work through containment. A 10% rise in imprisonment reduces serious crime by only 2-4%, and prison exposure often increases recidivism through criminal networking and reduced employment prospects. The costs are enormous. $300 daily per adult prisoner, $100,000 annually, and $600 daily for youth detention, $230,000 annually. Australia's 2013 criminal justice spending reached $14 billion, with $2.4 billion for prisons. Community corrections, despite better outcomes and supervising twice the offenders, receives just one-fifth of prison funding. Private security corporations profit substantially from prison expansion, while politicians leverage tough-on-crime rhetoric despite evidence of failure. Prevention and rehabilitation programs offer potential returns of $7 per dollar invested, far exceeding traditional incarceration's negative returns. Critics often ask reformers, "What about the victims?" suggesting defense lawyers protect bad people at victims' expense. However, victims and offenders typically share similar disadvantaged backgrounds and communities. Indigenous people face victimization rates 3 to 4 times higher than non-Indigenous populations. Most homicide victims know their attackers, with 70% involving prior relationships. Many offenders were once victims themselves. Research indicates 80% of incarcerated individuals experienced childhood trauma. The classical justice model reduces victims to mere information sources. After giving police statements, victims often feel abandoned while navigating complex legal procedures alone. Crimes are treated as offenses against public order rather than individuals, disconnecting victims from the process meant to serve them. The adversarial system subjects victims to aggressive cross-examination, often re-traumatizing them. Sexual assault victims face particularly challenging ordeals: invasive medical exams, repeated questioning, and persistent skepticism. Less than 40% report their assault, fearing this process. When courts find defendants not guilty, victims often interpret this as personal invalidation, sometimes leading to depression or suicide. David Williamson's play Face to Face demonstrates community conferencing, a restorative justice model that reimagines how we address criminal behavior. Rather than proceeding through traditional courts, participants engage in carefully structured dialogue, bringing together all affected parties. This direct encounter proves transformative in ways rarely possible in conventional legal settings. Since 2005, New South Wales has implemented forum sentencing based on similar principles, replacing punitive sentences with collaborative intervention plans developed by victims, offenders, police representatives, and social service providers. Early evaluation data has been striking. Between 61 to 76% of victims rated the conferences as very fair, while over 90% of all participants felt genuinely heard. Other innovative alternatives show equally promising results. Indigenous Koori courts, which incorporate Aboriginal elders and cultural practices, have achieved a 50% reduction in reoffending. Specialized drug courts generate $5.80 in social benefit for every dollar invested through reduced recidivism and healthcare costs. Neighborhood justice centers provide accessible mediation services that resolve conflicts before they escalate. These approaches succeed by slowing down the justice process, allowing time for deeper engagement and coordinated support. They create space for community wisdom, cultural healing practices, and evidence-based interventions that address root causes rather than just symptoms. The case of Wayne reveals our system's flaws. Despite making progress on parole, he was reincarcerated when his wife claimed assault during an argument. Though evidence was weak and she tried withdrawing the complaint, Wayne remained imprisoned, losing access to rehabilitation. His family suffered without his support, and child protection officers noted his recent positive influence at home. This family didn't receive help, just a system blindly following rules while ignoring consequences. We face a choice: continue getting tougher on crime despite mounting costs, or invest in addressing root causes of disadvantage. Most defendants aren't villains, but people struggling with multiple hardships. Their crimes often symptomize broader societal failures. By reimagining justice as problem-solving rather than punishment, we could create a system that serves victims, rehabilitates offenders, and builds safer communities while reducing costs. The evidence for what works exists. The question is whether we'll have the courage to address causes rather than merely punish symptoms.